what you look like you're doing. Express yourself. Express yourself.
Oh, yeah, on the moon. Well, this is Miss Moon, and welcome to Express Yourself on this fine, final February afternoon. I'm your hostess with the mostess, and Express Yourself broadcasts from the heart of the Carbondale Creative District and focuses on the creative sector in this valley. Today's a great example with an interview with Sarah Pletz and Joni Klar on the importance of art and environment and things that are going on around this valley and the arts. We're bringing back Walking Their Talk, creatives who are making a difference in our world, with an interview with Dylan Brown about his latest creation, Terra Bikes. And I caught up with Pokey Lafarge a couple days ago. We're going to hear that conversation. So stick around. All right. Well, I am in the studio here with some important royalty from the Valley, Joni Klar and Sarah Pletz. Well, seriously, as I learn more about you, it is true, and you both deserve it. Sarah Pletz is maybe a more known name in the Valley related to arts and 40 years of the Sarah Pletz Dance Theater. You've both been earth activists, and Joni, you've been with John Denver and Windstar, and oh my gosh, the list goes on. You're both here on behalf of the Earth Law Center out of Durango, and just as activists for the arts and making sure advocates that art really stays front and center. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's always fun to be with more royalty in the room.
Oh, it's so great. It's so great. And in fact, I would just love to touch more quickly on the history of both of you ladies and how you've been involved. I think it's really important. So let's start with you, Joni.
Thank you. Joni Klar, I arrived here in 1971 and got heavily involved with the whole Obermeyer organization, and I still am today. Once you're an Obermeyer, you're always an Obermeyer, okay? And now he's 105 and leading the way for all of us.
I know.
And of course, that's the center of ski fashion in America.
That's true, but you were also worked with Windstar and John Denver.
Yes, yep, very much. And I was... also, lucky enough to be dating Stacy Stanley at that time when he was the youngest mayor in the history of America, 27 years old. And I had studied political science, was going to be the first president of the United States from South Dakota, and just fix things because we raised doing rodeo, okay? Oh, so yeah. It's all a rodeo anyway. And he lived at Mrs. Pepke's house. Yeah. So she was my mentor.
Wow.
During that time, you know, you talk about royalty. That woman and her inspiration, leadership, and creativity and caring for this community was boundless. And look, all the things that it birthed in our valley.
That's right.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah, the Institute.
The Institute. And talk about art and culture. She was one of our grand dames of that, you know? She'd be front and center at all your performances, Sarah, still moaning and groaning like she always did. No, yeah, we knew it was her.
Oh, awesome. And Sarah, you know, I could, like, repeat what I've read, but tell us your story.
Well, you know, I do dance, theater, stage, film, internationally. I'm a visual artist, poet. But I'd really like to say that most people don't know that my mom, Janet Garwood, was the co-founder of the Sarah Pletz Dance Theater. And we pretty much put in the Snowmass Conference Center, the District Theater, the Red Brick Center for the Arts, the North Mill Artist Association building where my studio is, and the Recycling Center, and a handful of other things. So most people don't know how active we've been in the public arts facilities. Big deal. A lot of
big
work
deal
on all of those things. I remember when she wanted to see me dance, and I was in the Miami Ballet at 14, and she... we didn't have a real theater, and people were running around and arguing and hiring architects and where they're going to put a performing arts center. But we're from Maine. We went to the school board and said, look, you're building a school. Let's put a theater in. And we worked out the numbers, and we got it done. So I'd like people to know. And the thing I'd like to talk about the most here today is that Richie Cohen and Caroline Jacobson started the real estate transfer tax for the arts in 1979. And Janet and I were very instrumental in getting it renewed 3 times. It's been renewed 4. And I'd really like to talk about this election coming up. I know some people up Valley are listening from Aspen. It's a big election for what's going to be done with that arts money, because it's
huge.
Millions of dollars.
Huge.
And I'm quite certain that those last scallywags have... spent it mostly on admin and buildings. It's written in law. It's also supposed to be for culture, performing arts, and visual arts. And in 2021 alone, the former finance director went in and ran the figures. Less than 1% went out of $11.5 million. And no operating budget was funded. So actually, no art got funded.
Wow. But now through the Wheeler, there is a Wheeler Fund. Is that separate?
Here's the problem.
Yeah.
They absconded with the name. It's supposed to be the Real Estate Transfer Tax for the Arts. And folks, I mean, I'm a theater person. I helped get that tax done to get the Wheeler Opera House renovated. But it's mostly going to renovating it 3 times, changing the furniture. And actually, anybody that gets to an artist that gets to work there has to pay. All of the tax money is going to the admin, the building. It's pretty. I'm here today because that's not what the people voted for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's out of balance for sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, and that's hard because, so much is out of balance right now, right? Because I do know, even though they absconded with the name, that Wheeler Fund... probably for the first time in ever, is helping to support so many Down Valley organizations,
too. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good, because it's meant to be Valley-wide.
Yeah.
But could you just do me a favor for these 10 minutes and call it the Real Estate Transfer?
Okay, I will.
Those W-H-E-E-L-E-R people just stuck their name on it, and we never voted for that.
Wow, that's crazy. So what is happening in the arts in Aspen, then, around...
Well, I've been going to the older candidates, and I got to tell you, I've gotten on my knees and made proposals for a Valley-wide Arts Council. Well, Joni can.
Mm-hmm. That would be so awesome.
Joni can talk about it. I'm pretty frustrated myself.
Yeah, because it that's what it's supposed to be as well, and it hasn't been. So in this election, we really, really want to focus on that, and we had one of the questions at Squirm Night. Together, front on address that. What would you do with your arts funding? Would you put it back into the artist fund as needed and in this valley? So that's a really important question to ask everybody and make sure that we have an arts fund.
You can watch the Grassroots from Wednesday night.
It's Sarah's part of it for sure.
The questions that Joni and I put in were answered, and one of the new candidates said he would like money to go to performing art. You know, it can't just go to the admin in the buildings. I mean, if you're a local artist, you want to be in the Red Brick or the Wheeler, you have to pay to do it.
Right, right. And you know, the performing arts ever since COVID have not quite come back the way that other arts have. I mean, probably all the arts have suffered quite a bit, but I am a grant reader for the state of Colorado.
Okay.
And every small dance company, every small theater in the whole state are not making it, you know.
It's heartbreaking. And yeah. it's hurting us. It's taken the spirit
and the culture.
It.
Our whole culture is based on our art, our spirit, the body, mind, spirit that the Pepkies brought here, the Utes. This is all about spirit and the culture and how you express yourself artistically, honored in dance and form and music, literature.
Right.
That's what makes us people.
Well, let's move into the environment and the arts, and I think you both are involved in Earth Law and the work they're doing. I know they did something February 14th up in Aspen, but let's talk about what's happening there.
Thank you. Yes, the Earth Law Center based in Durango that was started 12 years ago by just brilliant, brilliant, caring attorneys and activists, is working now in 40 countries of the world
yeah.
to give Mother Earth a voice at the table, legally, in policy, in, you know, and it's just making a huge difference.
Yeah,
we need it. So we did 4 events during Valentine's Day so that, and it was just to focus on Valentine's Day, your love for your rivers
mm-hmm.
and the rivers in your heart, the rivers everywhere. And so we did at Art Basin Basalt a lovely luncheon with Gard Moses, one of our ancient creators of love in the valley and art.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
he was, and so many, Sarah. And we celebrated, you know, writing love letters to the river of our, in our hearts. And then we came into the John Denver Sanctuary, and at such a sacred time. And, you know, his best friend, Joe Henry, and renowned songwriter,
mm-hmm.
gave us one of my favorite songs, I Want to Be a River. And we read that song at the sanctuary,
beautiful,
the sacred sanctuary. And you could feel the spirit of John everywhere. And it just, you know, he just lit us all up, still does. And wherever I go in the world, and I'll say, oh, yep, I'm from Aspen, Colorado, and they go, John Denver,
yeah.
Rocky Mountain High. And it just lights us all up because of that message for his art and love for the environment. He inspired people all over the world, and we continue to be able to enjoy that and mm-hmm. celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. And right now my art studio is on the sanctuary.
Oh,
I
lucky.
Twice went into city planning by myself and kept condos and 2 concrete garages from being put along the river between Mill Street and Neal Avenue.
Oh, that
twice.
Would be so sad.
So it has been a huge task. And
yeah.
unfortunately, it's at risk again because it's the so-called, well, it is a theater company. When I helped establish. They're not very happy with me right now because mm-hmm. I don't want it developed. I don't want a road.
No.
I don't want cranes.
No one does that lives
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
No one does.
Well,
yeah.
it's under attack again because they've drawn up the plans. And
yeah. Who owns that land?
Well, Mother Nature, Earth does, but the city is supposed to be taking care of it. We wish the Utes were taking care of it.
I know. Believe me, that would make a lot of sense. Ugh. Well, we are in a time where a lot of things in our environment are really threatened. Now, I think Earth Law mainly focuses on the Americas, so
no,
they do stuff
everywhere.
In Peru, and but they go
yeah,
beyond
everywhere.
The Americas, because
mm-hmm.
I knew they did a lot of work
yes.
in South and,
yes.
you know, America and Canada. But, yeah, wow. And so we are in a place where so much is threatened, and there is not time. We are out of time, you know, working and fighting for the environment. I mean, we're in an uphill battle right now in all levels. I mean, Sarah, you're a great representative of really fighting at the local level to make sure that where we live, these sacred places are preserved, and it's a hard fight. It's such a hard fight, and you've probably been doing it 50 years. I mean,
and counting.
Yeah.
But you know, we just have to keep at it because it's worth it. Don Henley and myself and a handful of others at the Rose Society, we raised the money in Aspen to keep Walden Pond from being developed, and it worked. We did it. You know, we can do these things, but we have to act.
And that's where the Earth Law Center is so vital. It's there for all of us right now. And we have a program of governance that's just inspired leadership for wisdom to take our environmental stewardship and work with business to make it successful. It's there.
It's there. So how do people access this, or how can people get involved?
Well, they can really figure out when they vote Tuesday which candidates are going to stand up for the sanctuary, get that art money to artists instead of admin and redoing the lobby again and again. I'm not kidding.
But you can only vote if you're in Aspen.
Okay, so that's Up Valley, but that's Tuesday. That's 4 days away. Okay. You know, a man said to me today, I was going to Valley View for my PT. I've had major surgery and difficult walking. And he said, well, you know, Sarah, you should relax. I said, why? Look what I've been able to do. I'm not going to quit. You can't. You can't, you know, I mean, anyone listening, you know, call the friend that needs help. Help the person that's trying to keep the river in the back. You know, do it. Do it. Put in the 10 minutes. Put in the 20 minutes because that's what makes the difference.
No, it's true. And right now, I mean, every call you can make to any congressperson, any mayor, you know, it's just like you think it's not going to make a difference. But the thing is, any way that people can be bombarded and reminded that these places are special, and once they're gone, they're gone. There is not. You know, maybe the rivers can be reclaimed from dams. Maybe some are. And so that's hopeful. But
we did one on the Elwha River that's on our website, the earthlawcenter.org. Earthlawcenter.org.
Perfect.
And you can enjoy it.
They declared it a sacred river. Oh, my God, so beautiful, so beautiful. We should do that with the Roaring Fork and definitely the Colorado. I mean, you know, I kept the pesticides out of the park from running down the hill. It just goes on and on. I brought in the scientists from Dark Skies to turn off the lights so that the animals and all of us had a rest at night. We just have to do it.
That's right. That's right. And really, creativity plays a huge part in all of this. So however you can bring it, whether it's a visual artist, a photographer, a dancer, a singer, an activist, you know, coming together is what.
My first arts column coming up in the Aspen Times, it's a letter to Theodore Roosevelt. Dear Theodore, I don't know if people know, but he created the National Park System. And the reason he did was he was ill when he was 8 or 9. He was in bed for a long time, maybe like a year and a half. And his mother gave him a watercolor set.
Yep.
He painted before he fell in love. It, you know, before it was a guy and he was tromping around in the outdoors. And he's like, oh, look at how that's made. Oh, look how that grows. Oh, look how that is in the winter. He learned from painting.
That's right. And since you did mention it, you are going to be the new Aspen Times arts editor, is that correct?
Yes, so
everyone should look for Sarah's column in the paper. But it's true, Teddy's probably turning over in his grave right now. Let's hope.
No, he's helping us. I wrote him a letter. I asked him to help. I said, if you're too busy, could you send Warren Zevon's phone number? Because we might need money. What does it send? Lawyers, guns, and money. We may need that before Tuesday.
It is so true. Well, hey, ladies, I could talk forever with you. There's so many stories, and I really appreciate you coming down. It's an honor to have you both here. Let's just all of us keep up the good fight. You can always go to earthlawcenter.org. There's lots of ways to be involved there. And hopefully we'll see more events here in this area.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Yep. Yes.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, it's the international thing. Fridays for Future. It's the global warming. Global warming.
this the future. Wir gehen auf die Straßen unserer Erde, geht's nicht gut, kann man gehen sehen. Fridays for Future. Wir gehen auf die Straßen, Pachamama, geht's nicht gut. Boom. 20,000 people, Freiburg City ist am Start. Wir schwänzen nicht, wir kämpfen mit der Hand am Plakat. Ein jeder wie er mag, wir sind laut, wir sind stark. Wir warten doch nicht ab, ey, und schaufeln unser Grab. Ey, wenn Kraftwerke schwefeln und Politiker schwafeln, schreiben wir like oceans we rise auf unsere Tafeln. Denn wofür lernen, wenn es eigentlich keine Zukunft gibt? Alles immer nur so weitergeht für Märkte und Profit. But the snow must go on, handle jetzt oder schwimm später. Unsere Fäuste gehen nach oben, so wie Feinstaub im Meter. See you later, von der Dreisam bis zur Spree. Make the world green again, es gibt keinen Planet B. Hey! Fridays for Future. Wir gehen auf die Straßen, Pachamama, geht's nicht gut. Fridays for Future. Wir gehen auf die Straßen, Pachamama, geht's nicht gut. Doch mal ehrlich, Spaß beiseite, was bringt uns der ganze Scheiß? Wir stehen zwar auf der Demo, doch zahlen selber nicht den Preis. Für Fairtrade, Kleinbetrieb und weniger Fleisch. Lieber Klamotten, immer neu, straight aus Bangladesch und heiß. Avocados immer frisch und zu jeder Jahreszeit. Wie kann das alles sein, wenn ein jeder von uns weiß? Containerschiffe über See, sie kommen her von weit. Und so zahlen wir mit unserem eigenen Geld das ganze Leid. Neues Smartphone jedes Jahr, up to date, so nice. Und fürs Fahrrad ist uns jeder Weg auch zu weit. Unsere Eltern fahren SUVs zu unserer Sicherheit. Theorie und Praxis liegen nah beieinander oder weit.
Oh yeah, important words. And we do have to fight for our environment. And we have a great fighter and activist here with us right now. Dylan Brown, your filmmaker, adventurer, former journalist, maybe, and, you know, all-round creative. This is our segment called Creatives Walking Their Talk, and you definitely have been doing that for many years in many ways, but now you're launching your latest endeavor, Terra Bikes. Welcome. Tell the listening audience what Terra Bikes are.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, great to be here. Well, Terra Bikes is an electric motorcycle, a mid-size electric motorcycle designed to go in town and on trail off-road. So it is a lightweight bike. It can fit on the back of a tray rack in the back of your Subaru, the back of a pickup truck, the back of a Sprinter van, and it is street legal. So what that means is everything on the bike is DOT compliant, but because it's long travel and it has off-road tires and it's built by me living in Western Colorado, you can take it into the mountains and explore quietly and not disrupt other people and the environment and really just embrace this electric movement that we're all seeing.
Yeah, it's so amazing. I mean, I have a EV car, but folks, this motorcycle is right outside of the KDNK studios, and it's really beautiful looking. I mean, design is important in these things. Yeah.
100%. I mean, you know, you see a lot of bikes coming out and a lot of motorcycles coming out, and they're all futuristic. They have a lot of plastic. They have a lot of bling. But I wanted to create something that was timeless, something that we will look back in 20 years and say, you know what? That still looks really cool. You know, for me, looking back 40, 50 years of what the motorcycles look like in the 60s and 70s, those are timeless. People are buying those and kitting them and chopping them and turning them into a scrambler. And that's exactly what I did. I wanted to create that scrambler, that timeless bike that we will be able to work on forever, whether it's now, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. If you want to put slick tires on it, you want to put longer travel on it, you want to put a bigger motor on it, you want to put a bigger battery into it. Anything's possible with my bike. I just wanted to create a platform that we can all love forever, really.
So what is it like riding in the mountains at one of these? Because you're probably one of the few people that have, you know, have you been going out and doing some riding out there? And in that quiet, what's the feeling? Because if you haven't driven electric in any way, it's hard to imagine, I think.
Well, I think the craziest thing is if you're riding with, say, a traditional motorcycle, somebody with a combustion engine, and you roll up and they kill their motor and it's quiet and you're talking and you're looking out and just enjoying the views and you're like, okay, time to keep riding. You don't have to fire it up. Mm-hmm. You literally just peel away. And one of my buddies, I was up Thompson Creek riding with him, and we stopped and talked, and then I rode away, and he caught up, and we stopped and talked again. And he said, you know, it was crazy. I didn't even know your bike was on, and you just took off. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just one example of it. You're more immersed in nature that way. And then Draper White is a friend of mine. He bought my very first bike. He has it here. And he was telling me last fall he was up on, I believe, Basalt Mountain. And he said, you know, I came around the turn and there was a whole head of elk and they just stopped and they just kind of looked at me. They didn't really know what I was. And I watched them for a while. They wandered off. I turned around and started riding down the road. Literally one turn away was a black bear and a cub.
Wow.
You know, it's just, you know, you're just more in there. People, you know, animals, they just, you know, you're not scaring them constantly, which is really cool. I think just that sense of not disrupting is a really cool concept out here.
Well, you know, Dylan, I think when I first met you, you were doing a lot of photography and filmmaking. And so how has your journey led you to designing an electric bike?
Well, I think a little bit of it is being a commercial photographer. That's kind of where I was when you and I met. I go out and I meet all these creative people who have created brands, people who have created products. I help them tell their story of how to express that to the world, how to show the world why their product is unique and cool. And when COVID hit, I was a location shooter primarily. I got grounded. Mm-hmm. And I, just like a lot of people, started reassessing their life, started thinking about what they could do with the 10,000 hours of other things they may have accrued. And for me, that happened to be two wheels. I used to race mountain bikes. I still ride mountain bikes. My dad builds and rebuilds classic Hondas and old motorcycles. And really, it just kind of took those and just combined them. So I wanted to just, you know, try it myself. Hey, you know, let's give it a go.
So did you build the first one in Newcastle?
Well, when I first started, I was still here in Carbondale, and I bought a frame off the internet and built it. It was called a Stealth Bomber. And I learned a lot from that kit, a lot of YouTube videos and whatnot.
Wow.
And then I realized, you know, there's a lot of things I wanted to change. And so I started sketching it out. I found a frame builder in Fort Collins, and his name is James Bleakley, Black Sheep Bikes, great guy. And he helped me fabricate the very first prototype, the second prototype, and then from there, hired an engineer, and then we put everything in CAD and started doing it with laser cutters and CNC machines and making it perfect. And now we're at to the point where we're taking pre-orders for our full-scale production launch, and deliveries begin in June. And we've been very successful so far. We have an Indiegogo campaign happening right now. And we've already raised $100,000 and 22 backers, so 22 bikes pre-sold and about $100,000. And so we're doing really, really good, and we have a couple more weeks to go. So feeling very confident. People like the bike. People love the bike. And I can't believe we're here.
So where do they get manufactured now?
So right now we are actually in China. Really cool. We're sharing the manufacturing space with KTM, Honda, and then a company called CF Moto.
Wow.
So a lot of our electric motor technology, the Chinese have been doing it for a number of years, really almost 20 years. So just to be able to go over there and embrace this 20 to 30 years of technology and really know that what they've been doing is really hard to compete with here in the States. That's what we're doing. But what happens is they build them, ship them, and I do final assembly here and test them here.
Well, you better get them before March 4th. So, so the politics out there could affect things a little bit.
Of course. I mean, we all, you know, world trade is a complicated matter. Mm-hmm. I'm not too concerned about it. You know, obviously I can explore in parallel what it looks like to manufacture here. But for the last 5 years, I've been building the bikes here one at a time. I've been having conversations with potential partners in Detroit, in Southern California, even in Colorado on on the front range. You know, there are a lot of aerospace companies out there, but really it just kind of came down to numbers and how it works. And I'm able to scale in a small and steady way by going abroad.
Well, that's exciting. And so the plan is to sell just through your website, or are you going to get these into distributorships? What's the plan?
The plan's a little bit of both. So direct to consumer for sure. Just like Tesla and just like a lot of these electric car companies, people can go to the website, they can order a bike, and then we do all the legal paperwork online. But because it is a physical product, you know, I want to make sure that people have the support where they need it. So I do have a dealership network. We have locally here, Aspen Moto Works will carry a couple bikes. Nice. And then we have dealerships in Utah, California, and Delaware right now.
Wow. So are you doing this single-handedly? Who is helping you do all this?
You're looking at it mostly. Yes, wow. Me. But I do have a business partner in Utah and a silent investor out of Utah as well.
That's excellent, Dylan. That's so exciting. And so now, listening audience, if you really want to find a way to support Dylan and these kind of projects, where can they find, you know, more things about you, the Indiegogo? How can they get to you?
I think the easiest way would just be to go to our website, terrabikes.com, T-E-R-R-A. bikes.com. That'll direct you to our social media page, to our Indiegogo crowdfunding page, and my email address is on there. My phone number is on there. I'm an open book, so I'm down to talk bikes all day long. I love it. It gets me fired up. So yeah, if anybody wants more information, I do have a couple demo bikes, pre-production demo bikes. One's, like you said earlier, right outside the studio, and I have a couple more down in Newcastle where I'm based now. But yeah, the production bikes will start shipping in June, and I can't wait. They're quite an elevated version.
So let's talk a few details about these bikes. Like in my electric car, when I put my foot on the gas, zing, I am like far surpassing any of the other gas cars that are starting out. Is the motorcycle like that when you drive it?
Oh, yeah. Instant torque. There's nothing quite like an electric motor. It's very quick. But the cool thing about electric is it's all programming. Mm-hmm. So my bike has different ride modes. Ride mode one rides very much like an e-bike. You can't go faster than 25 miles an hour. Oh. So it's great for in town. It doesn't get you into trouble because, you know, electric is really fun.
Yeah.
And then ride mode two is a little bit faster. So it's kind of what I call like the city mode. It tops you out about 38 miles an hour. And then you have the final ride mode, which kind of opens it up, and it's off-road mode, and we top out about 65, 70 miles an hour.
Wow. And you could, since they are street legal, I mean, like, you could ride it from here to Glenwood or, you know.
Yes, I do ride it here to Glenwood. 82, because it is a mid-size motorcycle, mm-hmm. It's not going completely with the flow of traffic, you know, people, even though we know how 82 is,
right.
It's not, even though the speed limit says 65, at times people are going 75. Right. So I probably wouldn't hop on 82 for long stretches, but, you know, we have a lot of back roads. We have a lot of frontage roads. We have creative ways to get from Glenwood to Carbondale. And I've done that many times, and it's a great ride.
You know, Dry Creek Road, right?
Wow, Dry Creek is one of the best around.
Wow. And so then also, when you want to charge it, how do you charge it?
Charging is as simple as plugging into your household 110 volt outlet. Very simple.
Wow. So do you think in the outdoors, I know there was it Blue Sky Solar Chargers that was out of Woody Creek? I think they might have moved somewhere else. But anyways, I always wonder if we're going to get, well, probably not in the next 4 years, but you never know, into having more solar chargers out in the wilderness. Like if you were camping and you wanted to go for a couple of rides.
I mean, solar's tough. It takes
a long time.
It just takes a long time. Yeah. You know, the best and easiest solution for people is to have a second battery bank, you know, something that charges, trickle charges all day on the solar, mm-hmm. and then gets that boost off of your alternator, off your vehicle, if you say you're camping.
Oh, so you could do that.
Mm-hmm. I've built that in the back of my personal truck because, sure, I can charge it off of a inverter that goes off the back of my truck.
Wow.
But I don't like to run my truck while I'm camping. That's one of the benefits of electric is we don't have any fumes. So I did I did install a battery bank off the back of my truck, and I just plug in my bike to the battery bank, and I get an extra ride when I'm out in the woods.
Ah, how fun. And then also, are you, like, how are people in the world finding out about this? Are there, like, motor shows or shows that you are going to be, like, on the circuit with your Terra bike?
Yeah, I mean, ironically, that's a great question, right? A lot of e-commerce right now, mm-hmm. so Facebook, Google, all those mm-hmm. kind of your traditional online ads, a lot of grassroots networking like we're doing right now. And then, yeah, Electrify Expo is probably the biggest trade show expo in the country, and that is in every big city in the country. We'll go there, some other smaller expos, and then, of course, just kind of spreading the word as much as we can.
So had you gone to any of those expos before you jumped into this?
Oh, you bet. A lot of research.
Yeah. So and were there a lot of electric motorcycles out there, or is it just an emerging field?
It's getting crowded. But the thing with the electric motorcycle world right now is at the very beginning, everyone tried to come out and replace the Harley Davidsons and the Indian mm-hmm. motorcycles and mm-hmm. say, hey, we're going to build a bike that goes 100 miles an hour and that you can ride for 200, 300 miles. That proved very difficult. Mm-hmm. And then people started saying, well, okay, well, how about the throttle assist bikes, right? And so you have pedals and you throttle and they go fast. And some of these bikes go really fast, 45 miles an hour, which is, in my opinion, pretty unsafe, which is why we went the route of creating a small motorcycle that you can register and be compliant with DOT and register with the NHTSA. And then now you have this big uprising, or not uprising, but a lot of these brands coming out, Stargvark, which are MX bikes. So people that you see that people jumping 50, 60, 50 feet like that and going to the track and doing all these whoops and doing all this stuff. There's a lot of brands coming out like that. But there's not a lot of people doing what I'm doing. I'm not trying to replace the motocross mm-hmm. bike. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to replace the Harley Davidson. I'm trying to add another tool for us to explore our world directly around us in a clean and efficient and really fun way.
Which I love. I love. That's so awesome, Dylan. Well, congratulations, Terra Bikes, folks. That's T-E-R-R-A. And check them out. They're beautiful. You've done such good work. And they're right, basically from this valley. And so support local. This is one way. We don't have too many electric motorcycles coming out of this valley, right?
Not that I know of. Yeah, there's a couple other electric companies in the valley. But yes, yeah, I don't think anybody's doing anything quite like this in Colorado and probably not even the Western states, really.
Well, good luck to you. Really, really been a pleasure to have you. This is our creative. He is walking the talk, folks, and took all his creative skills and put them into something that can, help change the world. So thanks so much. He's also a new daddy. He's got twin girls. Imagine he's been doing all this and being a dad. Are you sleeping at all?
Finding a way. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for being here. I'm going to put on a little Pokey Lafarge because we got an interview coming up with Pokey. He's playing tomorrow night at Takah. You are tuned in to KDNK.
The farmer's tan, hotel slippers, margarita in his hand. Lots of juice, lots of spice. Me and Montezuma are gonna roll the dice. Chicago, hello, Mexico, it's so long, Chicago.
west of the Mississippi. Never seen the beach, never been out the city. Uh-huh. 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 Tide is out, but I'm jumping in. This flatlander gonna learn to swim. Uh-huh. So long, Chicago. Hello, Mexico. It's so long, Chicago. Hello, Mexico. Chicago. Hello, Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I can relate to that song. All right, Pokey LaFarge. Well, his music's hard to define, but it is steeped in vintage rhythms and instrumentation. It's got numerous recordings out, is a sought-after festival act, and is playing to call tomorrow night. I caught up with Pokey just as he was acclimating to Colorado in Colorado Springs on Wednesday. So give a listen. Hello, Pokey. Thanks for taking
hello.
Thanks for taking some time for us today. How's it going?
Great to be here. Yeah, we're just got in sunny Colorado. We got four shows here. Going to be making our way through Salt on Saturday. And really looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting up there. I guess, what are you? Are you 10,000 feet plus?
We are not. We're only like around 6,500.
Okay. Well, I live on the Atlantic Ocean in Maine, so that's going to be quite a ways up for me. We're looking forward to it. We'll be ready to go. We'll be acclimated.
That's right. That's right. And we'll be acclimated to dancing.
There you go.
Well,
love it.
When I first saw you, which I think was 7 or 8 years ago at the Palisade Bluegrass and Roots Festival, I would have described you as kind of old-timey, vintage-y feeling music. But now, through the years, as I listen to every recording you put out, I would not be able to describe you in any one particular way. You're so diverse and prolific, and you've been making music since 2006. Can you describe your musical journey for our audience?
Well, the musical journey is definitely the best way to put it. You know, describing my music now is just as difficult as it has always been for me. I started out in high school, I think, really most influenced by I guess The Grateful Dead really is what set me on my path, because they covered so many different older artists. It really got me into the blues, you know, covering Bo Diddley and Muddy Waters and cats like that. Jimmy Reed got me into country, you know. They covered Merle Haggard, and they covered The Meters, Hey Pocky Way. So just like so much, and that, actually through them, I got into Bill Monroe. And so bluegrass music was really my entrance into music. I didn't start on guitar. I didn't start playing. I didn't have a punk rock phase or anything like that. I started on mandolin, and I started playing bluegrass. And so that's what got me going. And then I went from that to fiddle, and from fiddle to guitar, and started playing fingerstyle guitar with the blues, and got into trad jazz after that. And so I've always been a songwriter. So my songwriting has been, you know, evolving, sure, but, you know, you have these different phases of interest. So my songwriting has evolved with my different interests and different genres. And now it's kind of more of an amalgamation, although, you know, I don't really play as much acoustic music as I used to. I really have fallen in love with my friend, a jazz master, another electric guitar. So it's definitely becoming more sort of like 50s, 50s blues, early rock and roll. Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Howlin' Wolf, you know, as much mm-hmm. as a little white boy from Normal, Illinois can do.
That's right.
You know, I do my thing. So I'm grateful to still be doing it after all these years. And God willing, I'll keep doing it for decades more.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Your latest release is Roomba Country, and that was released in 2004. What influenced the direction of this album?
Well, again, I mean, it's just different phases, you know. It's just you're maybe listening to a lot of different kind of music, and as a writer is influenced, you know, the writer has to read. And, of course, you're influenced by everything that you take in, whether you realize it or not. A lot of the music I was listening to, I had been living in California for a few years. I don't live in California anymore. But, you know, records, they are kind of like movies, you know. From the time they're actually released, they were written about three or four years ago in some cases.
Right.
Then you record them, and then it takes sometimes a year for them to get out. So, you know, I've kind of moved on from Roomba Country in a lot of ways. I mean, I still play some of the songs live, of course, but mm-hmm. I actually just got in the studio, just came from Chicago, and I've started a new record already. So,
oh, that's fabulous. So is Chicago one of your places that you like to record?
Yeah, I've recorded the majority of my records in Chicago. Mostly in Chicago. I do some work in L.A. too, but. You know, you go where the studios are at, sure, but it's mostly for the musicians, you know.
Right.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah. And speaking of musicians, who are you on this tour with?
Yeah, so my band, well, it's the same trumpeter and guitar player I've had for the last 3 years, Eric Myron, and then it's the same pianist and organist and vocalist I've had for the last 3 years, Hank Marin. But I'm super excited. I have a new rhythm section. We have Andrea DeMarcus on upright bass and vocals, and Beth Goodfellow on drums and vocals.
Nice.
We're going to be playing our first show together on Thursday. So, it's just fresh. It's new, taken to the next level. It's really special. I'm so excited.
Now, you are also getting into farming, I think I read.
Well, that was when. So my wife and I moved from Los Angeles to Maine back in 21, and mm-hmm. COVID was still going on. You know, we were the last to get back to work, and moving to Maine, I didn't really know what I was going to do because my wife wanted to move there. She felt called to move there, and I just was, you know, praying about it and just waiting. And the craziest thing, I realized, like, wow, I think I'm going to farm. And so I did that for about a year. I did that for a season. But then, the touring was able to open up again, so I got back on the road. But it was a valuable experience. I certainly was very inspired and wrote some songs as a result of it. Certainly got connected more to my community and was challenging myself with learning new skills, which is always good. And got connected more with God and that, in a lot of ways, through it, too. Mm-hmm. And I think perhaps in the future it'll be something I'll go back to. You know, we have some land, and not a lot, but in Maine. And if I ever get off the road a substantial amount of time, I'll hopefully start a garden. And if we have some kids down the road, it'll be something that we could hopefully all do together.
Wow. So you have really feel settled there in Maine now.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, I would definitely say so. I mean, it's a really special place. You know, we bought our first house. I think that definitely has something to do with it, too. But no, it's definitely our happy place. definitely where we're supposed to be, at least for now.
Yeah, it's good. You know when you find your happy place because you feel that contentment, you know, and that's great. Though I would imagine Maine is not always the easiest place to tour from.
You hit the nail right on the head. Yeah, we're an hour and 45 minutes north of Portland,
mm-hmm.
and that's the airport that I fly out of. So, yeah, you know, you make a little extra trip to get to just to get to the plane, and if you're always connecting somewhere, of course, because it's a major airport. It's on the East Coast, and it's a small airport. So every flight comes in at midnight, so you're actually usually spending an extra night there. But it's something that you just have to surrender to and welcome as a part of living where you live. You know, we live in a rural area, sort of an amalgamation of a bunch of small little communities.
Yeah, yeah. So now, what kind of music are you playing these days? When we go to your show, are we going to see kind of an amalgamation of all the different years? Or
yeah, you'll see an amalgamation of a lot of my different records over the years. Yeah, for sure.
Do you? I mean, this is kind of a silly question, but it's also interesting. Sometimes, are there periods, musical periods, for you in your life that really shine for you?
Yeah, of course. I'd say right now. You know, the new record that I'm working on, I'm super stoked on. I'm 41 and a half, I guess, more than that now. And I think only recently have I really found my singing voice in some ways, and perhaps even my guitar playing. Mm-hmm. It's taken a while. I've definitely been a late bloomer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've only been married for a year and a half, so. And like I said, children may be coming down the road soon too, God willing. So yeah, everything comes late for me.
Well, we like the journey that it's taken you to come late because you have been making music.
Amen.
Since 2006.
Yep.
Yeah, it's awesome. So when is the release of the next album? Do you have a tentative date?
No, not yet. You know, hopefully sometime early part of next year.
All right. Are you looking at lot of festival work this summer? Are you going to be out on the road?
I'm going to be out on the road a lot, yeah. From now until, let's see, the end of June, I'm pretty much out the whole time with a couple weeks in the studio in between. Yeah, we're going all over. We're going to Australia, New Zealand. We're going to be over Europe and UK. We're even going to Bahrain.
Wow.
We're playing a show in Bahrain. Totally crazy. So excited. And, all over the States, some club dates, theaters, and festivals. Yeah.
Well, gosh, we're excited to have you here on Saturday, this Saturday at Tikal. You're like bringing March in like a lion. Is that what they say?
Yeah. I love that.
Well, we will be there and really looking forward to it. KDNK Radio, which is where this is going to air, is helping co-sponsor the show. And we play your music quite a bit here on the station. So thanks for coming by our little part of the country.
Thank you for supporting me, you all. Thanks for listening. And thank you for coming to the show. If you haven't got tickets yet, I'm assuming there may still be some available, so you know where to get them. Or if you don't, I'm sure somebody will tell you soon. But look forward to seeing you all soon.
Well, before you go, where can people find? All right. That was a little Pokey Lafarge. And we have a beautiful surprise here in the station. I have Gabriella Mejia here, and we are talking about Rhythms of Tahiti happening March 2nd,
yes.
Right?
Yes. So excited about this show coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, so tell us real quick, what the heck is going on, beautiful?
So if you've ever been to the islands or to Hawaii or to any Polynesian island, we are going to be bringing that to Aspen. And I'm so excited because we are partnering with Teva LC, and he's actually from Tahiti. He flew in on Tuesday, 20-hour flight, and he is here to sing the beautiful songs of Tahiti, and we're going to be dancing with him, and we are collaborating. So I'm with Aspen Polynesia, and Sandra Prado is the founder, and so we're both going to be collaborating and bringing all the immersive and beautiful culture of Tahiti to Aspen at the Wheeler Opera House.
So all your performances will be to him singing live?
Correct.
Wow. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, and he has such a beautiful voice, beautiful voice.
Oh, that's fantastic. And just tell us a little bit about, you were saying, how many people from this valley are part of?
So we have about 10 people that are going to be dancing, male and female. And there's going to be live drumming. There's going to be live singing. There's going to be some little surprises as well. You might see some poi spinning. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's very energetic, but there's also storytelling. And so we'll be learning a little bit more about Tahitian culture, but also it encompasses just life in general and, you know, how to be in life and how to celebrate and just to have fun and really enjoy the beautiful things that life brings.
Wow. And so you have been involved with Sandra for
almost 3 years now.
3 years?
Yes.
But did you already know how to Polynesian dance?
Yes. Yeah. I learned in Chicago. So I've been dancing for about 27 years. Long time.
Wow.
Long time. And it's like it's in my blood. So I can't stop dancing.
Oh, it's so fantastic that we could get something like this here and that someone would come all the way from Tahiti to be able to sing in with this show. Is he going other places in the United States?
This is his first time in Aspen, actually, in Colorado. I believe he's been somewhere else. I can't remember, but he hasn't performed. So this is his first time actually being immersed into Colorado in general and Aspen, and he's super excited to be here. I hung out with him yesterday. Such a sweetheart, and his voice is like an angel. It's so beautiful. Oh. Takes you places.
I'm going to have to look him up. he's good looking, too.
Yeah, he is.
So we don't have much time. I wish we had more time. We're going to have to get you back on to talk more about this down the road. But right now, people can get tickets at AspenShowTix.com?
Yes, you can get tickets there, or you can get tickets at WheelerOperaHouse.com. And it's also on Sunday at 6 p.m. So
6 p.m., so it won't be a late show. You know, you can go, like, be immersed in Tahitian culture, and then...
And kids are welcome.
Go out to dinner or something.
Yes, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, Amy.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so glad that you called me, and we got a minute or two to be together, because Gabrielle is also designing for the fashion show, and she's an artist and getting retreats together. So thanks for taking the time. Yeah.
Thank you, Amy.